Now joining us, ESPN's Greg Wyshynski. Thanks for doing this, Wish. My co-host here has a secret admirer. 5 days in a row, he's received flowers here at the office.
Yeah, I do look forward to the eventual catfishing that will be happening.
Let me have this, Wish. Let me have this.
That's pretty great. I saw you were tweeting about the stolen ice cream last night. Do you think it was a real happening, or was it staged? Couldn't have been staged, right?
Well, Sarah Sibian, who covers the Hurricanes for The Athletic, I think caught up with one or both of the folks involved over
the thieves.
Message.
Or the thief.
And it appears as though they know each other, and so it was a gag. It wasn't
a random
incident of a drive-by.
Yeah,
it seems like they are buddies. So I guess we could say we split it halfway. You know, it wasn't a complete work on the part of the team or anything like that.
Right.
But at the same time, it wasn't completely without premeditation.
He is Greg Wyshynski, ESPN, joining us here on Reach Deep. So the Vancouver Canucks, they've lost four in a row. The world is melting here on the West Coast. All the good thoughts have dissipated. No, that's not totally true. But your thoughts on the Canucks so far this year, who – even during this losing streak, the team itself has remained positive on the way that they've played.
And they should. I mean, you know, as you know, I picked them to make the playoffs.
Yeah, we do know that. Yep.
As of now, that's still a valid pick. Again, I think that this is a very good hockey team. The only concern I had about them entering the season was health. When it came to making that pick, in the sense that, you know, the key players for this team obviously have earned the reputation of not being able to play a full 82. So you have to be happy with the fact that they've had the health so far for the most part. And, you know, I watched them against the Devils. It was a competitive game. They somehow made Mackenzie Blackwood look like Marty Brodeur. That seems to be what happens now when they play him. But was impressed with the way they played. And, you know, there's going to be ebbs and flows to the season. And like you said, I think the fact that they're still fairly healthy and the fact that they've played, you know, pretty well, even if they've not gotten the results, is at least encouraging.
Well, Thatcher Demko gets a start tonight in goal for the Vancouver Canucks. And it kind of speaks to the whole Jaro Halak, Tuukka Rask, you know, 1A, 1B, where you alternate to a certain extent anyways, and the Canucks haven't got there. But we saw Bobrovsky get a lot of money in the offseason. Do you think that deal is pretty much might be the end of big money deals for goaltenders, and we're probably inching towards more of a 1A, 1B setup going forward from here on out when it comes to the NHL?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. We had we actually had Ed Belfour on our podcast today on ESPN, and we talked to him a little bit about the difference between when he was playing, when guys played upwards of like 75 games in a season, and now where, you know, the load management of your goaltenders seems to be such a key aspect of, you know, whether or not you're going to be able to make a deep playoff push. So, yeah, I think a lot of it depends on you know, the goalie. You know, Bobrovsky is a very rare case in the sense of having a Vezina guy who can eat up a bunch of starts and has proven that he could play like that. Having that guy available, and especially when you're a team like the Florida Panthers, who have been undermined by horrible team save percentages for the last couple of seasons, it just was a natural fit, and the contract was going to be what it's going to be. You know, you can count on maybe two hands right now the number of guys in this league that fit that category, and you know, those guys don't exactly become available all that often. So long story short, yeah, I do think that it's going to be more of a platoon situation for most teams. And the other thing too is that in a capped league, we have seen the trend in multiple seasons of teams trying to do their goaltending as cheaply as possible. Whether that's you know, something they can actually achieve, I don't know, but it does seem like when it comes to planning out their rosters, it's spending a lot of cap space on their skill players and then hoping the rest kind of falls into place. And in many cases, the goaltending is part of that rest.
Greg Wyshynski, our guest. Quinn Hughes has, I guess he's slowed down a little bit here with the Canucks, but Cale Makar is up to a point per game, and these two rookie defensemen may be at the forefront of the Calder conversation at the end of the year. Are you surprised that each of their respective teams have kind of handed over the offensive keys a little bit to these two very young players?
Not really. I mean, the way that the league has gone as far as it becoming so much more offensive, and you know, right now we're ahead of last year's pace when it comes to goals per game, even though it's still early. You can be a defenseman of this ilk and come in and you know, play your game a little bit better than you used to be, I think, in the past. In Makar's case, and I think it also depends on the player, too. I mean, in Makar's case, he showed a lot during the postseason last year, like he was NHL-ready. In Quinn's case, same kind of thing, where you just get the sense that he's going to be able to step in and do his thing. Last year, same deal with Dahlin and Heiskanen. A lot depends on the player, but I think in this day and age, you can throw a young player out there and be confident that he's going to be able to play stylistically what this league demands and not get gobbled up physically like you might have been, say, 15 years ago.
You're listening to Reach Deeper, joined by Greg Wyshynski of ESPN. Greg, the Coyotes get the win yesterday against the Capitals. They're trending in the right direction when you look at the defensive style that they play, but they're getting some offense as well. Are you taking them as for real right now? Because I think for, you know, the first 10 games of the season, everybody's a little wary, but now they've played a few more. Do you like this team, and do you think they're for real?
Yeah, I thought they were a bubble team coming into this season. I may have had them on the outside looking in ultimately. But the things we knew about them were, one, that the goaltending was going to be solid, and I think it's been like that for most of the season. And that, you know, some of the incremental changes that they made personnel-wise offensively, whether it was the acquisition of Phil Kessel over the summer, whether it was, you know, Grabner 2 years ago, eventually these things are going to start paying off as far as turning around what was such an Achilles heel for them last year in their shooting percentage. And you're right. I think it's funny that there's still this perception of the Coyotes of being this giant snooze-a-thon type team. But they do have a number of guys now up front that can put the puck in the net and that can create some offensive excitement. So they're going to be right in the thick of things. You know, I think Rick Tocchet definitely has this team systematically playing the kind of hockey that you need to play to win. And, you know, last season it was just a matter of getting a break or two or adding a body or two to be able to be a little bit better offensively. And so far, so good as far as those acquisitions go.
The Edmonton Oilers, I know you've just written on Leon Draisaitl up at ESPN right now. They're off to an unbelievable start. They're top of the Pacific Division. It's a weird spot for Draisaitl. He's kind of do you see him as like Evgeny Malkin all over again? How Malkin has spent his career in the shadow of Sidney Crosby? It's similar for Draisaitl?
So far, I mean, the only difference being, and I asked Draisaitl about this for that story, the only difference being that, you know, Sid and Gino didn't really play together all that much outside of the power play. In the case of Connor and Draisaitl, obviously, they're line mates. So it's a little bit harder to parse out the accomplishments of one from the other. I asked Draisaitl about that very thing, you know, are you the Malkin to Connor's Crosby? And he laughed a little bit. and he said, look, you know, I want to win individual awards. I mean, every player does. But at the end of the day, it's not a vicious competition between the two. If anything, there isn't a competition between the two, he said. You know, the primary goal right now is to try to find a way to get the Edmonton Oilers back into the playoffs, and then I guess you let everything else sort it out. But, you know, I look back at Sid and Gino insofar as the Hart Trophy goes. If you go back the last seven seasons, Crosby has received a Hart vote in all seven. Malkin, since winning the Hart, hasn't received a Hart vote in six of seven seasons. And in the year he won the Hart, he only won it because Crosby was limited to 22 games. And everybody, you know, lauded Malkin for carrying the Penguins on his own. So it seems pretty obvious that, like, you know, one is connected to the other. And I feel like if the Edmonton Oilers make the playoffs, you know, McDavid's going to suck all the air out of the room when it comes to postseason accolades. Unless Draisaitl finishes with a significant points lead in the way that Connor's going, I'm not sure that's going to happen.
The other thing about the Oilers right now is their style of play. Of course, it's working, but Dave Tippett has just said basically we're going to try and clog things up and we'll stay in close games and I'll play those two guys as much as I can in the third period and hope they provide the difference. Is that a sustainable strategy?
I want to say no, but when it's these two guys, I mean, it's hard to say that it's not. I mean, look, they're contributing to 60% of the goals the Oilers have scored this season. That's hard to maintain, right? But the margins being what they are in the Pacific Division, with teams being up and down, and you know, some teams like the Sharks getting off to a pretty bad start. You know, maybe that's going to be something that can sustain itself through the season. The thing about the Oilers, like you said, is structurally they just look different than they did in the previous couple of seasons. And Tippett's done a really good job in figuring out ways to protect what is, you know, in theory, sub-average goaltending and playing a style that allows them to kind of hang in there until Draisaitl or McDavid does something. I talked to Tippett a bit yesterday about splitting those guys up, and you know, is there a temptation to take Draisaitl off of McDavid's wing and try to establish another scoring line to give the team even more depth? And he says it's something he toys with. He says it's something that he thinks about, and within games, depending how things are going, it might happen. But ultimately, it's still, you know, the McDavid and Draisaitl show on the power play at 4-on-4, and especially at 3-on-3. And I think that's what we can expect going forward. But I will say that, you know, Nugent Hopkins, who didn't exactly have the best start to his season, I think has played a lot better. And he's probably the most important player on that team beyond those first two guys insofar as trying to establish something beyond the top line. So they've got some stuff there and they're playing the right way. But right now it's so reliant on two players to provide most of the offense.
Wish, you're one of our favorite New Jersey Devils fans. Got to ask you about Taylor Hall, of course. What's the mood in Jersey right now based on what's going on there? And if he is available, let's just solely look at it as a rental. What's the most intriguing option or potential fit for you if he is indeed dealt?
I'm still trying to figure out what that pool of Devil fans looks like. if I'm your favorite,
I'm just going to leave it at that. All right,
20 options, or enough to fill a parking lot, right, for a cup celebration. No, obviously a lot depends on what happens in the next 2 months, not only on the ice, where the Devils, you know, seem to be taking two steps back for every step forward. But also in Ray Shiro and the team getting a sense of where Taylor's head is as far as the contract negotiations go. Look, if the Devils are out of reach when it comes to a postseason spot in the next 2 months, you have to really start examining, you know, the potential for a trade. And I don't think that Shiro is going to be gun-shy about that if it's clear that Hall doesn't want to come back. This isn't a situation where he's going to sit on an asset. Where do I think he's going to go? I've heard for whatever reason for years that the Boston Bruins could be a potential destination for Taylor Hall through free agency. I don't know why that is. I've just heard it from a couple of people. I don't know if it's just echo chamber stuff or whatever. But like ultimately, that's one team that I have kind of my eye on. But that's a next season thing. As far as a rental thing goes, I mean, it all really comes down to, you know, cap space, when they trade him and what that prorated hit would look like if they, you know, gobble up some of his hit before a trade, and who thinks they're close. You know, I'm intrigued to see what that derby looks like. And I think that in the Devil's case, if they are in a situation where they have to deal him, I think the return is going to be pretty hefty for him.
Before we let you go, though, the big news in the hockey world in the last 24, 48 hours, Don Cherry's comments and the response. I want to move this conversation forward. We often wonder whether hockey can be inclusive or if it is for everyone. Does this and the way it went down give you hope maybe we're trending in that direction?
Oh, for sure. The thing I thought about immediately when this controversy hit was the way the crowds were made up for the Raptors run in Toronto versus the way the crowds were made up for some of the Leafs playoff runs. And the difference was stark, and the difference was noted as well, insofar as the demographic mix and hockey's challenges in trying to change the configuration of its fan base. And I feel like there's a real recognition now of the work that has to go in, whether it's to call out comments that are exclusionary, whether it's to make teams live up to the promise of hockey is for everyone. I think as a sport, and both in Canada and the U.S., there's a real acknowledgement now that we need to get the barriers and the walls that are built up that make people feel like they're not welcome to play or participate in or follow our sport. You know, it's time to tear it all down and make people understand that the tent is huge and that you're invited and that, you know, it's a wonderful game that in theory should bring everybody together. And comments like that, I think, are deleterious to that and rightfully were called out and dealt with.
Well said, Greg. We really appreciate the time. We'll talk soon, yeah?
Anytime. Thanks, boys.